From his personal behavior, you might never guess that Bjorn Lomborg is skeptical of much of the conventional wisdom about global warming. Do you do anything in your own life to, as people put it, reduce your carbon footprint?
In many ways, yes. Actually, I never owned a car. I only bike. So obviously, that's one of the ways that you can make your societies work more easily towards a low carbon footprint.
Lomborg rides his bike around his home in Denmark, where authorities make it easy to do so. But he is doubtful that such tactics will make a big difference. His book is called Cool It, The Skeptical Environmentalist's Guide to Global Warming. He does not deny that climate change is happening. He does not deny that people cause it. He does question the money we propose to spend fighting it. He says it could be better spent elsewhere.
I'm involved in something where we ask some of the world's top economists to evaluate all the different proposals that are out there in the world on how we can help the world. And they then evaluate it according to, you know, bang for the buck. Essentially, where can you do the most good? What they tell us is that if you invest, for instance, $1 in preventing HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa, you end up doing about $40 worth of social good. If you invest in malnutrition, you do about $30 worth of good in the world. And on the other hand, they say if you invest in things like the Kyoto Protocol, you end up doing about 30 cents worth on the dollar.
Why worry about the cost so much if the subject here is the future of civilization as we know it?
Yeah. Of course, if civilization was to just simply come tumbling down, then maybe we should be willing to spend whatever it takes. Or no, not maybe. We should be willing to spend whatever it takes. The point, though, is that's not what climate change is about. Just to give you a couple of examples, Al Gore talks about sea level rise, and that's absolutely true. The UN climate panel tells us that sea levels will rise.
And coastal cities will be in more danger.
Yeah, but it's important to say it will rise about a foot over the coming century, but not the 20 feet that Al Gore likes to point out.
How do you know it's only going to be a foot?
Well, this is the
best. I mean, the 20 feet,
yeah.
When people talk about 20 feet, correct me if I'm wrong, what they're saying is if all of the polar ice, the ice cap on Greenland were to melt and go into the ocean, you do have a huge sea level rise.
Yes. It's not me that you should trust. It's the UN climate panel, the thousands of scientists that we've always said these are the gold standard on which we base our discussions on climate change. Now, what they say is that sea levels are most likely to rise somewhere between half a foot and 2 feet.
So in your point of view, I mean, a 2 foot sea level rise, somebody might have to add even more onto the levees in New Orleans. A country like Bangladesh would face even more flooding than it does now, but it's not going to end the world. That's your point of view.
That's part of the point, but let me just add another part. We would rather not have sea level rise, but the point is it's a manageable cost. Do we help them best by investing in their future through dealing with the problems that they have right now? For instance, they have huge problems with clean drinking water. Should we help them with that, or should we rather implement the Kyoto Protocol, which will basically lower a couple of tens of inches by the end of the century?
What makes you confident that extreme efforts, if you want to call them that, against global warming are going to slow down economic growth?
Well, that's what all economic models are telling us. If you spend money on doing good, it makes sense to say that has a cost, but it also has a benefit. The cost being that you divert efforts from doing other things, both immediate things, as we talked about with the Bangladeshi, to help them, for instance, dealing with their drinking water instead, but also, in general, it divert resources because we're going to be paying more for our energy. We're going to be paying for having windmills instead of oil wells. We're going to pay for having a production that will use less carbon. That's fair, but, you know, let's be honest about it and also say it has a cost.
Although, you know, the classic counterexample, I suppose, would be people's refrigerators, which apparently use a fraction of the energy that they used to, which is, I guess, at least in theory, a very nice thing for the environment and certainly nice for people's pocketbooks, and nobody even noticed, didn't hurt anybody.
No, absolutely. And you have to remember, underlying this whole conversation, there is a predominant move that we've seen over the last 200 years towards producing things more efficiently. We actually get better and better at doing everything, and that's what you see. Your car actually runs more efficiently, your refrigerator, as you say, your heating. But the problem is, as your car runs more efficiently, you buy a car with air conditioner. As your heating system works better, you also buy a house that has more square footage. So we do have a tendency overall to use more and more energy, but absolutely, we do move glacially slow towards solving the problems just sort of automatically. But the argument that I try to make is, instead of focusing on cutting emissions right now, which will be costly and have fairly little effect, let's push on that development much more. Let's get smarter at solving the future problems, or to put it differently, let's get much better technology to our kids and grandkids so that they can solve climate change at fairly low cost and to solve this smarter.
So rather than imposing laws and signing treaties like Kyoto, you want more research and development on cheaper ways to cut back on carbon. And what's one or two other things that you would advocate doing about global warming right now?
There's many, many different ways you could do this. I mean, look at some of the ways that we've, for instance, the space price, where you had prices for the first people who got into space. Imagine likewise to have prices for the first people who find different benchmarks for solar panels, the most efficient ones, the most cheap ones, the most bendable ones, the most water-resistant ones, all those kinds of things. The idea here is to say, if you want people to move to a non-carbon energy-emitting civilization, you have to have great alternatives. And that's why I'm saying, let's focus, instead of cutting that one ton that makes us feel good, let's focus on getting technology that'll enable many, many people to cut lots of tons instead.
You know, a couple of years ago, we interviewed Jared Diamond, author of a book called Collapse, which looked at civilizations which in many cases had destroyed their own environments or failed to adapt to a changing environment and didn't seem able to realize what they were doing, or certainly not able to stop it. The classic example being people who lived on Easter Island cut down every last one of their trees, including the very last tree. At some point, someone made a decision to cut down the last tree.
Yeah.
Do you worry sometimes that our own civilization might not see our own self-destruction coming?
We should definitely have that conversation. But one of the things that I think has a dramatic difference from the Easter Island and many others is we have self-knowledge about these issues. And the important point, I think, with what climate change is showing us is that there's also a tendency in many societies to sort of get fixated on just one thing. And I worry that climate change is that thing that we're fixated on right now, so that every problem has to have the solution cut CO2. Well, maybe many problems don't. Maybe many of the things that we could do best are not the ones that involve fixing climate change first.
Bjorn Lomborg is the author of Cool It, The Skeptical Environmentalist Guide to Global Warming. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Steve.
And you heard him on Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.